Lord Peter Whimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter and Peter Jones as Bunter. The Five Red Herrings by Dorothy L. Sayers. Adapted in 8 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 4, Bunter Investigates. Lord Peter Whimsey is investigating the murder of Sandy Campbell, an unpopular Galloway artist. He and Inspector Macpherson of Kirkcudbright are putting together a case against Hugh Farran, another painter, when they learn that Farran's bicycle has been found abandoned near some disused lead mines, suggesting he may have committed suicide. At this moment, Whimsey's friend, Chief Inspector Parker, arrives.
Charles, how extraordinary. What brings you to Scotland?
Hello, Peter. Well, I had to come up to Dumfries yesterday for a conference, so I thought I'd pop over to see you before getting the night train back. Bunter told me I'd find you at the police station. You've got yourself involved in another murder case, he says.
I have indeed. This is Inspector Macpherson of the local force. Macpherson, Chief Inspector Parker of Scotland Yard.
Afternoon, Inspector.
Very pleased to make your acquaintance, Mr. Parker. I'm afraid you've come on us at a sad moment.
Oh, why is that?
Well, one of our suspects has... a wee bit difficult to explain.
You better begin at the beginning, Macpherson. Mr. Parker will have to know. We've been wanting him to keep watch on that bicycle at Euston for us.
Aye, my lord. Well, Mr. Parker, beginning at the beginning, as his lordship says, at 2 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, we found the body of one Alexander Campbell upside down in a burn called the Minnoch, over beyond Newton Stewart. It looked as though he'd been painting up a bin and had stepped back to admire his picture, maybe, and had tumbled down the back and smashed his head on the rocks. However...
His lordship soon convinced you that the man had been murdered.
How did you guess that? That's exactly what happened. And what is more, not that he'd been simply pushed over the edge again, but that he'd been murdered the previous night.
And how did you know that, Peter?
Oh, several things. Not least the rigor mortis. When we saw him, Campbell looked more than 12 hours dead. And that in itself was immediately suspicious, because someone wearing Campbell's rather distinctive hat and cloak had been seen painting above the Minnoch that morning at 10 past 10. And again at 11:05.
Not Campbell.
Precisely, Charles. Not Campbell, but the murderer pretending to be Campbell, in order to establish some sort of alibi.
Ah, well, at least you know the murderer must be an artist, too. Yes, well, but a lot of people who live hereabouts are, aren't they, Inspector?
Aye, sir, there are a good many, but we managed to whittle the list down to 6 suspects, all of whom quarrelled with Campbell shortly before he died.
Well, 6 is still quite a lot.
Ah, but what a 6 they are, Charles. Waters has disappeared. Graham had disappeared, but turned up yesterday evening, refusing to say where he'd been. Gowan's servants claimed that he went off to London unexpectedly and conveniently on Monday night. Strachan turned up on Tuesday morning, lying about where he'd been and with a beautiful shiner, and Ferguson, who's Campbell's next-door neighbour, was certainly travelling to Glasgow on Tuesday morning, but didn't tell the police the whole truth about what he heard at Campbell's cottage on Monday night. And as for Farran, well, half the evidence seems more or less conclusive about his guilt, and the other half denies it absolutely.
It is a very difficult case, Mr. Parker. We know Farran was threatening to kill Campbell on Monday night. We know Campbell met someone on the road between here and Gatehouse later on and had a fight with him. Wee lassie called Helen McGregor saw him. And now that Farran's bicycle has been found up by Falbay, it looks very much as if Farran killed himself afterwards in a fit of remorse. But, if all that is true, what is that bicycle doing at Euston?
The theory was, O'Parker, that the murderer got away from the Mirk after pitching Campbell's body down the bank by bicycling to the railway at Girton. When he changed trains at Ayr, he relabeled his bicycle and dispatched it to Euston, out of harm's way. But as they've now found Farran's machine up at the lead mines, we must conclude either that Farran is innocent, or that the bicycle and the traveller on the train have nothing to do with the case.
So, what do you want me to do?
Well, to start with, O'Parker, get us an accurate description of the machine at Euston. From the details we've had so far, it sounds like one that was stolen from the Anworth Hotel on Monday night. Though, if that's the case, I admit we won't be much further forward, as anyone could have stolen it. However, we might at least be able to eliminate Waters, whose bicycle has also vanished.
Righto. I'll see to it.
Ah, thank you. The inspector and I were just about to pay a visit to the scene of the murder to look for the weapon when you arrived. Will you accompany us? Young Helen McGregor reported that a spammer flew through the air towards her while Campbell and the murderer were wrestling in the road. There's no reason to suppose that it ain't still there, waiting for us, simply gleaming with fingerprints, what?
Sorry, Peter, I don't think I can stay. I must pay a courtesy call on the Chief Constable before I go.
Oh, rightio then, Charles. Well, in that case, we'd better say cheerio. I'll see you when I come back to London. Come along now, Macpherson. Leave someone else to organise a search party for Farron and let us go a spammer hunting.
Any luck, my lord?
Not so far, Inspector. It must be here somewhere. Keep looking. Hello, 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 hello. What's this? Aha. Inspector?
Aye, my lord.
Come here. Here you are. A King Dick spammer.
Well done, my lord. You've not touched it.
Now, what do you take me for?
Might be fingerprints you get.
Either might.
And if there are, we'll only have to get the prints of Farron and Compeer. How will we do that now?
Razor, palette knife, picture frames, pots, anything in his studio. Studios are never dusted. Well, while you're wrapping that up, Inspector, I'll just be ambling over the road to where the actual riot must have taken place. Though there won't be much trace of it now, I'm afraid.
It's not likely with cars and cattle passing up and down. For by this dry grass takes no march, most of pity. But take a look around, my lad.
I will. Hello.
What's that?
What indeed? Did you ever hear, Inspector, of the Kilkenny cats that fought till only their tails were left behind them? Now, here are two gentlemen having a fight, and both of them spirited away, leaving only this, a tuft of hair. And what's more, it's the wrong colour. Now, what do you make of that?
Black, curly hair. That's a queer thing, my lord.
Cut off, too, not torn out. Very interesting. It's soft and silky, and it's never been trimmed at the distal end. It might come from one of those sweet, old-fashioned, long-haired girls, but the texture's a bit on the coarse side. Well, this is a job for an expert, really, to say where it does come from.
What makes you say it's never been trimmed, my lord?
Well, see how the points taper? Is there a female in the country with hair so black and so curly that's never been shingled or bingled? Where are blokes wrestling for a love token, Inspector? Well, if so, whose? Not Mrs. Farron's, unless she's turned from a Burne Jones to a Rossetti in the night. But if it ain't Mrs. Farron's, Inspector, where's our theory? Hello, here's some more. Oh, gracious me. Some love token. I say, let's trot home with this and interview Bunter. I have a notion it may interest him.
Oh, you think so? Well, that's not a bad idea neither. But I'm thinking we'd be better away to Newton Stewart first.
What for?
To find the doctor, my lord, and get the undertaker to open the coffin. I have a great fancy to see how this spanner fits yon wound in Campbell's heat.
And did it fit, my lord?
Yes, Bunter, it did. The doctor thought the contused area on the left cheek was certainly caused by the spanner. And the larger dent on the temple, the one which actually killed him, could well have been too. Unfortunately, the fingerprint evidence was not so satisfactory.
In what way did it fail to persuade, my lord? Were you not able to secure an adequate print?
Oh, there was no problem about that. We got a beautiful one of the right thumb. Unhappily, though, it derived not from the murderer, but from the victim, which we verified by taking the fingerprints of the corpse. Yeah, confounded nuisance.
Indubitably, my lord.
Well, never mind, Bunter. We'll win through yet. And now I must get ready to go out. I'm going to give the inspector dinner at the Galloway Arms this evening to compensate him for the disappointment he suffered over the prints.
Very good, my lord. If you are to be out, my lord, would you have any objection to my attending the local cinema this evening?
No, not a bit, Bunter. Go along, get your hair down. I won't be in until midnight, anyway. I promised Bob Anderson I'd drop in tonight. You know what a social vortex his studio is. I thought that if I went along, I might pick up one or two clues from the assembled company. You never know.
Hello, 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 hello.
Here he is, Bob. Here's Lord Peter.
Lord Peter, excellent. Come away here. Here he is, everyone, the man to tell us all about it.
All about what? What, back for the ledger?
The ledger be damned. All about this business of poor Campbell. Tell us, Whimsy, you that's hand in glove with the police.
Ah, I am sorry. I'm not allowed to tell anything. You mustn't tempt me. It's not fair. I could not love thee, Bob, so much loved I not honour more. Besides, I'm supposed to be finding things out, not giving information away.
Well, you're welcome to all we know.
Am I, Miss Selby? Ah, thank ye. Tell me then, how many hundred people in the county besides Jock Graham knew that Campbell meant to go up to the Minnock on Tuesday morning?
Oh, you'd better ask who did not. He told us all here on Sunday night, didn't he, Mr. Ferguson?
Yes, I remember it perfectly. Aye. And I fancy I said something about it to Farron on the Monday morning, because he had a tea party or something fixed up for Brighouse Bay on Tuesday and said he hoped they wouldn't run into Campbell.
What about you, Strachan?
Oh, yes, I knew too. My wife and I met him up there on Sunday while he was doing a preliminary sketch, and he told us.
Campbell seems to have been much more communicative than usual.
Oh, Campbell was not such a bad fellow if you took him the right way. He had an aggressive manner, but one couldn't really take him seriously.
Well, many people did, though, Bob. Matthew Gowan, for one.
And Hugh Farron, for another.
And Waters, too. By the way, Whimsy, what's happened to young Waters?
Well, I haven't the foggiest idea, Strachan. As far as I can make out, he's supposed to be in Glasgow. Did you see anything of him there on Tuesday, Ferguson? At the exhibition, for instance?
No. The police asked me that. Do I take it that Waters is suspected of anything?
Oh, no, I don't think so. It's just that if he was on the way to Glasgow on Tuesday morning, he couldn't have been up at the Minnock.
The odd thing is that nobody saw him in Glasgow.
That's right.
I mean, he was supposed to be going by our train, but he didn't, did he, Mr. Ferguson?
I didn't see him, but I wasn't looking for him particularly. I saw you two ladies get in at Dumfries, and I saw you again at St. Enoch Station. But I went off in rather a hurry. I had to take my Magneto into Sparks and Crisp for repairs. Confounded nuisance, that Magneto.
Oh, well, Sparks and Crisp will provide a nice little alibi for you.
Eh? Oh, yes. I don't know exactly when I got there, but they'll be able to say. I took a tram up. I should think I got to their place about 3 o'clock. The train was a quarter of an hour late, of course. It always is.
It was near 20 minutes late. We were very much annoyed about it.
Aye.
Local trains are always late. It's one of the rules. It's done so that the guard and the engine driver can step out at every stop and admire the prize marrow in the station master's garden. However, this ain't getting us any further.
Investigating the murder, you mean, Whimsy?
Mm-hmm.
Shall I tell you what I think? I think the whole thing's a mare's nest. Probably it was only an accident after all. The poor man lost his foothold and tumbled down the bank.
Well, it's possible, Bob. I won't deny it. A great deal depends on how long Campbell actually spent up at the Minnock on Tuesday morning. Ferguson, you don't know what time he left home by any chance, do you?
I heard his car moving off about 7:30.
You didn't see him?
No.
7:30, then. And it's about 27 miles, so he would have got up there sometime between about 8:30 and 8:45. How long would it take him to do his sketch, do you think?
Oh, we haven't seen the picture. How can we possibly tell?
Look here, I know how we could get a rough idea. Supposing all of you were each to start off with a panel that size and a rough charcoal outline. Could you kind of fudge something up, imitating Campbell's style as much as possible, while I stood over you with a stopwatch? Well, we could take the average of your speeds and get a sort of line on the thing that way. Why?
I reconstruct the crime, you mean?
In a sense, yes.
Well, that's all very well, Whimsy, but no two men paint at the same rate. And if I, for instance, tried to paint like Campbell with a palette knife, I should make an awful muck of it and get nowhere.
Oh, possibly. But then your styles are so very unlike Ferguson.
I'll be sporting Lord Peter. If it's really going to do any good, I don't mind making a fool of myself.
Oh, that's the spirit, Margaret. I'll come along too, Lord Peter. Now, what about you, Mr. Strachan?
Well, I don't mind having a dash at it.
All right, then, we all will. Have we got to go up to the scene of the tragedy, old man?
Starting at 7:30.
Well, it's no good getting there too early because of the light.
Ah, well, now, that's one of the things we've got to prove. How soon he could have got going on it.
Is it tomorrow morning you're thinking of? Yeah,
sooner the better.
Will you convey us there?
In the utmost luxury.
Oh.
And Bunter shall provide hot coffee and sandwiches. All right, everyone?
Aye.
Ferguson?
I think it's monstrous. going over in carloads like that and having a picnic.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'll come if you like, but I think it's rather disgusting all the same.
Never mind, you'll get over it. Well, thank you all. And now I better go home and place the order with Bunker. What shall I say? Coffee and palette knives for six. Bunter?
My lord?
Bunter, something very odd is going on at Mr. Gowan's house. I was on my way back from Bob's when I saw someone engaged in a moonlight flitting.
I was about, my lord, to make a similar communication to your lordship. I have already taken upon me in your lordship's absence to acquaint the chief constable, Sir Maxwell Jimison, with Mr. Gowan's project of escape. I have every reason to anticipate that he will be detained at Dumfries or Carlisle.
For God's sake, Bunter, explain yourself.
Very good, my lord. When your lordship was good enough to acquaint me with the result of Inspector Macpherson's preliminary inquiry at Mr. Gowan's house, it came to my mind that possibly a greater amount of information might be elicited from Mr. Gowan's domestic staff by a gentleman's personal attendant than by an officer of the law. With this object in view, my lord, I desired permission to attend the cinematograph performance tonight. There is, a young person employed in Mr. Gowan's household of the name of Elizabeth.
Bunter.
From whom, in the course of conversation yesterday, I obtained the information that she was to receive permission to spend this evening out. I invited her to attend the cinematograph entertainment in my company. During the course of the performance, I contrived to render our relations somewhat more confidential.
Bunter.
Your lordship need be under no apprehension. In short, the young person confessed to me that during the last few days, circumstances had arisen which had put her into a state of considerable trepidation. I naturally inquired what these circumstances might be. In reply, she gave me to understand, my lord, that her alarm was occasioned by the presence of a mysterious stranger in Mr. Gowan's house.
You fascinate me, Bunter.
Thank you, my lord. I succeeded at length in eliciting from her the following particulars. The mysterious occurrences of which she complained had commenced to eventuate on Monday last, on which day she had received permission to spend the evening with a sick relative. On returning to the house at 10:30, she was informed that Mr. Gowan had been suddenly called away to London and had departed by the 8:45 train for Carlisle.
Yes, that's what the butler chappie, what's his name, Alcock, told Macpherson.
Yes, my lord. The next day she was expressly forbidden by Mrs. Alcock to enter a certain corridor at the top of the house. Being, however, of the female sex, the prohibition immediately aroused in her a strong spirit of inquiry, and on the first possible occasion she went into the forbidden corridor and listened. She heard nothing, but to her alarm detected a faint odour of disinfectant. An odour which immediately connected itself in her mind with the idea of death. The young woman was then still more frightened by hearing footsteps ascending the stairs. Not wishing to be caught in an act of disobedience, she hastened to conceal herself inside a small broom cupboard at the head of the staircase. Peeping through the crack, my lord, she observed Alcock, carrying a jug of hot water and safety razor, pass along the corridor and enter a room at the end. Convinced that there was a corpse in the house, and that Alcock was on his way to wash and shave it in preparation for burial, she rushed downstairs and indulged in hysterics in the pantry. Early next morning, however, my lord, she went up to the top of the house again. She ventured a little way down the corridor, when she was rooted to the spot by the sound of a hollow groan.
Really, Bunter, your narrative style would do credit to the castle of Otranto.
Thank you, my lord. I'm only acquainted by repute with the work you mention, but I understand that it enjoyed a considerable vogue in its day. The girl Elizabeth was hesitating whether to shriek or to run away, when the door at the end of the passage was opened in a stealthy manner, and a terrible face looked out at her.
A terrible face. Very well, I've got that. Come along now, a terrible face. And?
The face, as I understand, was enveloped in grave clothes. The jaws were closely bound up. The features were hideous, and the lips writhed away from the protruding teeth, and the apparition was of a ghastly pallor.
Look here, Bunter, could you not cut out some of the fancy adjectives and say plainly what the face was like?
I had not myself the opportunity of observing the face, my lord, but the impression produced on me by the young woman's observations was that of a dark-haired, clean-shaven man with protruding teeth under the affliction of some form of physical suffering.
Oh, it was a man, then?
That was Elizabeth's opinion. She then heard a bell ring violently. She rushed down the passage in blind alarm and retired to her own room to hide her head in the bedclothes.
The best thing she could do.
Precisely, my lord. She was much disturbed. I spoke as encouragingly as possible to the young woman and offered to accompany her back to Mr. Gowan's house. She informed me, however, that she had received permission to spend the night at her mother's.
Indeed.
Exactly, my lord. I therefore took her home and returned to the High Street, where I observed Mr. Gowan's saloon car standing before the door. It was then 11:05. It was borne in upon me, my lord, that some person was about to take a surreptitious departure from Mr. Gowan's residence, and that Elizabeth had been given a night's leave of absence in order that she might not be a witness of the proceedings.
I think the inference is justifiable, Bunter.
Yes, my lord. Presently, a tall figure, closely muffled in a scarf and overcoat with the hat pulled well down to conceal the features, emerged from the doorway. And the impression produced upon my mind was that it was Mr. Gowan himself.
Gowan? Then who was the mysterious stranger?
I could not say, my lord. The car moved away, and on consulting my watch, I found that the time was 11:03. I formed the opinion, my lord, that Mr. Gowan had, after all, not departed from Kirkcudbright on the Monday night, as Alcock had stated, but that he had remained concealed in his own house in attendance upon the sick person observed by Elizabeth.
Curiouser and curiouser. Did you inform the police?
I thought it best, my lord, in view of the delicacy of the circumstances, to communicate directly with Sir Maxwell Jimmison. I hastened to the Selkirk Arms and put in a call from there.
Well, you must have passed me. I just heard across to the police station, but Inspector Macpherson wasn't there.
I regret extremely that I should have missed your lordship. I informed Sir Maxwell of the circumstances, and I understood him to say that he would immediately telephone to Castle Douglas and Dumfries with a view to intercepting Mr. Gowan if he should make his appearance at either of those points, and that he would also circulate a description of the car and its driver.
Well, well, well. For a quiet country place, Kirkcudbright seems to boast a bright lot of inhabitants. They appear and disappear like Cheshire cats. Well, I give it up. All I know is that it's perfectly useless for me to try and detect things. You're always off the mark before me.
Thank you very much, my lord.
Good morning, Inspector. Come along in. Hey, you're lucky to find us at home. Had the weather not broken, we'd have been away on a sketching expedition.
Sketching, my lord?
Yes, I was going to take a couple of our suspects, plus a few decoys, up to the Minnoch to watch them paint. I'm sure the clue to this case lies in the painting habits of our six prize beauties. Incidentally, any news of Farron? You've not found his body yet.
No, my lord, but there are two or three shafts still to be explored. They could be awkward as they have water on the bottom.
We must just hope for the best.
Aye, my lord.
Now, tell me about Gowan. Did the police pick him up all right?
No, my lord.
No?
No, my lord. The chief constable bungled it. Yeah,
he couldn't have done.
Well, he did. That's fair ridiculous. That they should have missed Gowan is not thinkable. I'm so conspicuous with this big black beard and all.
Oh, Inspector. Inspector, he's done us. Oh, what dopes and ninnies we are. And now I suppose that damn photograph's been circulated all over the country.
My lord?
The black curly hair, Inspector. Show Bunter the specimen. Bunter!
By God, I believe your lordship's right. And me certain that it was Farron.
My lord?
Bunter, here, come in here. What do you make of this?
My lord, it is most regrettable that I did not see this before. Without presuming to speak as an expert, I may say that on several occasions I've had the opportunity of examining the beard of a person belonging to the Mohammedan persuasion. You are doubtless aware, my lord, that the strict followers of this sect consider it unlawful to trim the hair of the face, with the consequence that the beard is extremely silky in texture, each hair preserving the natural tapering point. Your lordship has doubtless observed that this specimen conforms in every particular to this description, and having seen Mr. Gowan's beard, I do not hesitate to give it as my personal opinion, subject to expert correction, that Mr. Gowan will now be found to be deprived in whole or in part of that facial adornment.
Oh, yes, I am afraid you're right, Bunter. Well, now we know who the mysterious stranger was and what he was suffering from, you will have to revise your theory, Inspector, and put Gowan in the leading role.
Aye, go and send off a corrected description at once.
Ah, just so. But have you the slightest idea what Gowan looks like without his beard? Do you realise, my dear fellow, that you have never seen anything of Gowan's face except his eyes and a somewhat exaggerated nose?
Well, we'll catch him by his nose, my lord.
Yes. Well, if I were you, I'd look for him in London. Didn't Alcock say he belonged to a club in Piccadilly?
Aye, my lord.
Hmm. I go and call on Chief Inspector Parker at the Yard. He'll dig him out for you.
Come in, Inspector. Sit down. Well, I was hardly expecting to see you again so soon.
I hope I'm not being a nuisance, Mr. Parker.
No, not a bit, not a bit. Well, we checked up at the Milestick for you. Mr. Gowan certainly hasn't been staying there, but one or two letters for him have been collected by a gentleman presenting his card, which suggests he's not far away. Well, we'll find him for you, don't worry. What do you want done with him when we've got him?
Is it your opinion that we have enough evidence to arrest him?
I only know what Lord Peter told me on the telephone. But I take it your idea is that Gowan killed Campbell in a fight on the Gatehouse Kirkcudbright Road.
Aye, sir.
And then got frightened and decided to fake up the accident.
Aye. Uh-huh.
Why did he shave off his beard?
Because he had to go back to Campbell's cottage in Gatehouse and spend the night there pretending to be Campbell.
Ah.
That beard was so conspicuous, had he been seen, he would have been instantly recognised.
An awkward bit of barbering, nevertheless. Well, why didn't he go home first and get this Alcock fellow to do it for him? But the man's been lying like Ananias ever since you first spoke to him. I can't believe he would have flinched at one degree of guilt more.
I don't know, Ken, Mr. Parker. But I will admit this theory doesn't explain everything. For instance, a traveller with a bicycle who went from Girvan to Ayr. The description is not a bit like Gowan, even without his beard.
Yes, I can't make sense of him at all. Unless Gowan contrived to disguise himself in some way with a false, fair moustache.
Goodbye, Mr. Parker. If Gowan did leave Kirkcudbright on Tuesday, who was the man Elizabeth saw at the top of the house?
Or who, for that matter, was the muffled-up man escaping at dead of night? Now, it seems to me, Inspector, that the man you should be interrogating is Alcock. And from what I've heard, Alcock is a man of considerable resource and sagacity. Parker, yes? Hmm? Yes, he is. All right. Aha! Thank you. Your local station.
Oh?
News for you. Alcock's disappeared.
In that episode of The Five Red Herrings, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Bunter, Peter Jones, Parker, Stephen Thorne, Inspector Macpherson, Don MacKillop, Miss Selby, Nell Brennan, Miss Cochrane, Audrey Muir, Bob Anderson, Henry Knowles, Ferguson, Ian Blair, and Strachan, Gordon Clyde. Bunter Investigates was adapted by Chris Miller from the book The Five Red Herrings by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.